Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We'll read several verses this morning. We'll start with text 12 from Canto 9, Chapter 10. Lord Ramachandra, whose lotus feet are worshipped by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, had assumed the form of a human being. Thus, he performed the funeral ceremony of Jatayu, who was killed by Ravana. Then, the Lord killed the demon named Kabandha, and after the monkey chiefs killing Vali and arranging for the deliverance of Mother Sita, he went to the beach of the ocean. Purport: when Ravana kidnapped Sita, he was obstructed on the way by Jatayu, a large bird. But the powerful Ravana defeated Jatayu in the fight and cut his wings. When Ramachandra was searching for Sita, he found Jatayu almost dead and was informed that Sita had been carried off by Ravana. When Jatayu died, Lord Ramachandra did the duty of a son by performing the funeral ceremony, and then he made friends with the monkeys to deliver Sita Devi. Text 13. After reaching the beach, Lord Ramachandra fasted for 3 days, awaiting the arrival of the ocean personified. When the ocean did not come, the Lord exhibited his pastime of anger, and simply by glancing over the ocean, all the living entities within it, including the crocodiles and sharks, were agitated by fear. I didn't know that crocodiles inhabit the ocean. Ever heard of that one before? Crocodiles in the ocean? Okay. Then the personified ocean fearfully approached Lord Ramachandra, taking all paraphernalia to worship him. Falling at the Lord's lotus feet, the personified ocean spoke as follows: "Oh, Alpuling, we are dull-minded and did not understand who you are. But now we understand that you are the Supreme Person, the Master of the entire universe, the unchanging and original Personality of Godhead. The demigods are infatuated with the mode of goodness, the Prajapatis with the mode of passion, and the Lord of Ghosts with the mode of ignorance. But you are the master of all these qualities." Purport: the word Jada Dhyā refers to intelligence like that of an animal. A person with such intelligence cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead without being beaten. An animal cannot understand the purpose of a man. Similarly, those who are dull-minded cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but when punished severely by the modes of material nature, they begin to understand him. A Hindi poet has said, "Dukha se sabha hari bhaje, sukha se bhaje koi. Sukha se agar hari bhaje, dukha katan se hai." When one is distressed, he goes to the church or temple to worship the Lord. But when opulent, he forgets the Lord. Therefore, punishment by the Lord through material nature is necessary in human society, for without it, men forget the supremacy of the Lord due to their dull, blunt intelligence. Important message. Text 15. My Lord, you may use my water as you like. Indeed, you may cross it and go to the abode of Ravana, who is the great source of disturbance and crying for the three worlds. He is the son of Mishrava, but is condemned like urine. Please, go, kill him, and thus regain your wife Sita Devi, O great hero, although my water presents no impediment to your going to Lanka, please construct a bridge over it to spread your transcendental fame. Upon seeing this wonderfully uncommon deed of your lordship, all the great heroes and kings in the future will glorify you. Purport. It is said that a son and urine emanate from the same source, the genitals. When a son is a devotee or a great learned person, the seminal discharge for begetting a son is successful, but if the son is unqualified and brings no glory to his family, he is no better than urine. Here, Ravana is compared to urine because he was the cause of disturbance to the three worlds. Thus the ocean personified wanted him killed by Lord Ramachandra. Paragraph. One feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Ramachandra, is omnipotence. The Lord can act without regard to material impediments or inconveniences, but to prove that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and was not merely advertised as Godhead or elected by popular vote, he constructed a wonderful bridge over the ocean. Nowadays it has become fashionable to create some artificial god who performs no uncommon activities, semicolon. A little magic will bewilder a foolish person into selecting an artificial god because he does not understand how powerful God is. Lord Ramachandra, however, constructed a bridge over the water with stone by making the stone float. This is proof of God's uncommonly wonderful power. Why should someone be accepted as God without displaying extraordinary power, potency, by doing something never to be done by any common man? We accept Lord Ramachandra as the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he constructed this bridge, and we accept Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he lifted Govardhan Hill when he was only 7 years old. We should not accept any rascal as God or an incarnation of God, for God displays features, special features, in his various activities. Therefore, the Lord himself says in Bhagavad Gita 4:9, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvatah chakpa deham punar janma naiti mam eti sorjana. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. The activities of the Lord are not common. They are all transcendentally wonderful and not able to be performed by any other living being. The symptoms of the Lord's activities are all mentioned in the Shastras, and after one understands them, one can accept the Lord as he is. And even conversely, the the activities of Krishna and Ram that are in the category of no ordinary person can perform them, gives impetus to the materialistic persons to dismiss them, dismiss the whole presentation of Krishna and Ram, for example, or Lord Nrsimhadev as mythology. As in the pastime of Krishna's disappearance, when Krishna made his disappearance pastime, he satisfied the devotees and he satisfied the materialists. He gave the materialists their aha, their verification or proof. He's like one of us. Or the impersonalists, aha, he has a material body. Although in Bhagavad Gita directly, Krishna says he doesn't have a material body. Manushim tanam ashritam param bhava majananto. Foolish people think that he has assumed a material form. Well, here's evidence that he left behind a material form. Just like somebody that's embodied leaves behind a bodily form. So there. Contradictory behavior. Why would he on the one hand lift Govardhan Hill and the other hand leave behind a material body? Because what material body can lift a hill or a mountain? It's so long. It lifts a big rock. What to speak of a mountain? Apparently contradictory behavior. But on both ends, appreciated by the devotees and verification for the non-devotee, this is just mythology, or Krishna is an ordinary person. If we were God, what would we do? We don't need to worry about it, because there's already God, and he does as he likes. This a little bit about the appreciation of the sequence of the Sandarbhas. It touches on this topic of the all opulent Supreme Lord. In sequence, the Sandarbhas go Tattva Sandarbha, then Paramatma Sandarbha, then Krishna Sandarbha. So, then Priti Sandarbha, Bhakti Sandarbha, Priti Sandarbha, that's the six. So one might think, well gee, this is a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, so why doesn't he, as soon as he establishes the authority of the Bhagavatam in Tattva Sandarbha, why doesn't he go right away to Bhagavan? Bhagavat Sandarbha. Or even more specifically, Krishna is the source of all Vishnu expansions, the source of everything, to Sandarbha. And one answer is his audience, he was preparing his audience to accept the authority, because he's already established the authority of the Bhagavatam, but to accept the authority more deeply, just as when Vidura asks his questions of Maitreya, and he can ask him anything. He asks him about creation. Vidura knows about creation. He's Vidura. He's a highly learned person. But he asks about creation, in part because he wants to hear about it from a perfectly realized person who's had Krishna's association and has heard everything from Krishna directly. So that's the starting point. And this Paramatma Sandarbha is dealing with a portion of a plenary portion of Krishna that deals with what we need to understand in order to understand Krishna, which is the world around us, material nature, the living entity, and time, same as in Bhagavad Gita. Because right away, if we just present Krishna, then he'll be thought of in terms of worldly, because that's the contamination of material consciousness. So to remove that contamination, here's the Supreme Lord, who is the Lord of Prakriti. And then above the Paramatma feature is the Bhagavan feature. And, oh, by the way, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's purposefully sequential. All of those initial sandarbhas, they're under the same category of sambandha. Sambandha again, the relationship of all things with the source from which they come. And the pinnacle is Krishna is the source of everything from which everything comes. But to get there, it's in stages. Because his audience may not have faith that Krishna is the Personality of Godhead, and they may not read further. But, or wrongly criticized because other truths about Krishna haven't been established. So, in this Bhagavat Sandarbha, not yet Krishna Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami asserts that in order to understand God, Bhagavan, one has to accept that he has unlimited and inconceivable potencies. And if one can, then one can understand him. And if one can't, then one can't understand him. So whether Krishna, going back, whether Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill or leaves a material body, or whether Ramchandra requests Samudra for assistance to cross the ocean, or he floats stones to build a bridge to cross the ocean. So he's seemingly ordinary, seemingly beyond human capacity, seemingly human, seemingly beyond human capacity. Not just a request, he fasted for 3 days. He's the Supreme Lord. What's he doing fasting? He's showing a human-like nature. One has to qualify oneself for anything. And acceptance of austerity is one of the ways, particularly in the Satya Yuga, qualifying persons for strength. Strength of determination, strength of the control of the mind, strength of control of the senses. So, austerity, fasting for 3 days, seemingly ordinary. He didn't need the power coming from a performance of austerities. Just like we hear about Vishwamitra. He wanted to become a Brahmarshi, not just a Rajarshi. So he was really, really, really intense in his performance of austerities, and through those austerities he became very powerful. Very powerful. Performance of austerities helps one become, according to one's intention, one can become powerful. So for us, our austerities are quite simple. Rise early in the morning, take bath, brush your teeth. Have you gotten to the point where you brush your teeth every morning? Oh, good. And our austerities are quite simple. Quite simple. That can accelerate or amplify or become extended, increase our chanting and increase our vratas during the Damodar month or the whole of Kartik or Ekadasis or etc. Increase our hearing and chanting on those sacred pieces. But those austerities are actually joyful. They're joyful in many ways, but one of the ways is they help to control the mind and senses. And the mind and senses are such a disturbance, if not controlled. And when controlled, they're very useful in performing service to Krishna nicely. So it's joyful. Just like a king, they're very happy when there's some competition and someone challenges, and they like it. If there isn't somebody, then they'll engage wrestlers and people that will, you know, lash them strongly because they like it. So similarly, someone who's a brahmana, their happiness is the performance of austerity. It's not painful, it's happiness. It's a mode of nature. They like. Or it's the opposite. They don't like the other. They don't like the life of indulgence. They don't like it. It's just like keeping something very clean. It takes time and effort. But a person in the mode of goodness, they can't live otherwise. Come to a place that's not clean, they can't stay there. Or they have to make it clean. Or they just can't stay there. So, Lord Ramachandra need not perform austerities, but he performed austerities. At the same time, just after that, he exhibited his transcendental power, displaying to the world his position as Bhagavan, one who has strengths and opulences and energies beyond any limit. So Prabhupada's taking the opportunity here, saying not if someone does not exhibit such transcendent position, why accept them as the personality of Godhead? Now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even in his case, he was, according to the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, the form of the Lord that appears in Kali Yuga, he appears hidden. Therefore this term Chana avatar, right in the Bhagavatam. But even he was hiding himself, he performed transcendental activities that ordinary people cannot do. Many. Curing. Many transcendent. Bringing people to the position of pure devotion. The best of all transcendental gifts. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Prakashananda Saraswati, leaders of Mayavad teachings and Mayavad sannyasis, thousands of disciples, and just by his association, they gave it all up. Jagai and Madhai, and no limit to that capacity of his to deliver people. And his transcendental exhibitions of ecstasy when residing in Puri, unprecedented, not fiction, unprecedented symptoms of transcendental ecstasy. So, in this way, showing his divinity. Let's go back a little bit with some of the earlier verses, just comment a few things. The funeral of Jatayu. Of course, the Jatayu met them. Jatayu was perched on a branch as they were passing through the forest. They saw him, uncertain whether he's a mystical personality with evil intention, but he indicated his position was just to watch over Ram, Sita, and Lakshman and give them protection. So when they understood his intention, that was the service that he performed. And so when it came time for the abduction of Sita, he was there. He saw and he acted. And he, although very, very old, he couldn't just let Sita be taken away and let it happen, although it meant losing his life. But he couldn't let it happen, and intensely he fought and fought and fought and fought. But Ravana's more powerful and defeated Jatayu. But such affection did Ram have for Jatayu and Jatayu have for Ram. One of the features of Lord Ramachandra, even nine, the Leela is such that not only human beings had love for Lord Ramachandra, but many persons outside of the human species had love for Lord Ramachandra, unflinching, undying mood of love and service. And Ramachandra felt that same affection in reciprocation. So, as stated here, like a son, he performed Jatayu's funeral. Then the next is this Yat Rosha Vibhramam. He, induced by anger, he, with his glance, he boiled the ocean. You know, there's different versions of Ramayana, but some say the ocean receded for miles and everything was steam coming out of the ocean and poor living entities in the ocean. So the personification of the ocean, he's the protector of the aquatics and everything within the ocean, and so he came forward and offered prayers to Lord Ramachandra. Now, the indication that we're hearing from Prabhupada's nice purport is that was necessary, that intense behavior on behalf of Lord Ramachandra was necessary to remove his ignorance. And Samudra recognized his ignorance that covered his real knowledge. Even when seeing the personality of Godhead, he is a devotee. He is a devotee. But seeing the personality of Godhead, he didn't recognize him. He disregarded him. So that's an offense. And to shake him up, the strong action was done. Anger, transcendental anger. We hear about this transcendental anger also in relation to Lord Nrisimhadeva exhibited. And the demigods, his devotees, were afraid. But Prahlad wasn't afraid because he understood that anger is meant for others. So in the case of Samudra, the anger was to wake him up from his ignorance. And we hear from his prayers, it worked. And now he's, although you don't need my help for anything, you have my help. I'm at your service. These pastimes of Lord Ramachandra are, as we've been discussing, simultaneously there's something transcendental, and simultaneously there's something instructive about good behavior, good conduct, and the consequence of negligence of good behavior and good conduct. So, the Lord doesn't need our service. We are given an opportunity to do some service. That's for our benefit. He provides opportunities for service for our benefit, because he doesn't need anything. He doesn't need anything. He's Atmarama, fully self-satisfied. So why does he do it? Why does he do anything? If he's, the rationale is, you do something because you want something. But if you don't want something, then you don't do anything. So if you just be an impersonalist, just you're Brahman or Brahman realized, you don't need to do anything because you don't need anything because you're self-satisfied. But even those that are self-satisfied, they want to do something for Krishna, and Krishna wants to do something for his devotee. So these are pastimes with devotees. And if there's some impediment, some pride, or some negligence, or some ignorance, or some whatever, then the Supreme Lord engages in activities that help that devotee go beyond that obstacle so they can come to conscious devotional service. Sometimes it's necessary. And in this mature world, there's a lot of ignorance. In this age of Kali, there's a lot of ignorance. So people are put into difficulty, including devotees. Someone just raised this question, a college student, one of the IIT students, because we had some program there Monday, this week. Why do devotees suffer? Here's one. Because they've forgotten Krishna. That doesn't necessarily mean this is the minimization of karma, or certainly not karma, and it's not necessarily even minimization of karma. It's, there's different reasons, and this is one of them, to waken us out of ignorance. We want to be happy, and when something puts us into difficulty, we turn to God. At least, according to Bhagavad Gita, pious people turn to God. So difficulty is for devotees as well, sometimes needed. So we can be more dependent upon and conscious of Krishna. Okay, I think that covers these texts. We hear some more Shukadeva Goswami speaking about the bridge tomorrow morning. Comments? Yes? Question? You're on.
Sometimes we are going through the Sanishta Bhakti, but sometimes we feel, even though the services or the austerities that we are following is not as as prescribed or supposed to be, but, you know, but we see mercy of the Lord coming in the home and go even when we are not. Sometimes we are struggling, we feel that yes, we are going to
sometimes when we're striving, what happens? Not the whole thing, just this last part.
Our sadhana is not good.
Sadhana is not good.
But we see the mercy coming.
Mercy is coming.
Sometimes
sadhana is good. Sadhana is good and mercy isn't coming. Krishna is independent. It can be so many things. One of the things Krishna doesn't like is pride. One of the things Krishna likes is our sense of dependence. That means letting go of the independence that Krishna likes. And will you be feeling dependent upon me even if you're doing nice sadhana and things don't go well? Can be many reasons. But in essence, it's a loving relationship. And Krishna's loving. And Krishna's helping us even when sadhana's nice and it looks like mercy isn't coming. Mercy is coming in a way that's not how we would expect mercy to come, but it's mercy coming to help us. The nature of the yogamaya potency or the internal potency is it draws us or brings us to Krishna. So with faith, we continue, knowing that we're being drawn to Krishna. And that's Krishna's kindness. That's mercy coming. And it may be, the future may look like this or like that. It's Krishna. Our faith tells us, by definition, the internal potency. Internal potency means Bhakti Devi. Bhakti Devi is an expansion of Radharani. We're being brought to Krishna. And we have our expectations. And that's part of the problem. So the expectation may not be met. So we can let go of our expectations. And business. So we may not understand when we're going through. And there's other examples besides the two you gave. We may not understand, but one thing we can know, Krishna is very kind. And with faith, the bhakti process is drawing us closer and closer. Go ahead.
When we were reading about Parikshit Maharaj's trying to curse Parikshit Maharaj, it was mentioned that he should never, the kings are Narottamas, they never make any mistake. But at the time of Parikshit Maharaj also, during that time, there are so many kings who made the mistakes.
How all the things are what?
Kings. How they can be Narottama. Like a statement, kings are Narottama.
I don't know what you're referring to. What are you referring to, Narottama?
I'm referring to the Canto 1, 19.
Canto 1, chapter 19.
And it was mentioned Parikshit Maharaj is not supposed to be treated as one of the you out of yoga maya, I mean out of his ignorance, you get the
yes.
To give that explanation, the formula of explaining that in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that the king should never be pointed out that he makes mistakes.
Okay.
Then Sringi was pointing Parikshit Maharaj's mistake.
It seems to you that the last part was Shukadeva Goswami is pointing out his mistake. Shukadeva Goswami is pointing out a mistake, and Prabhupada was saying, okay, why, your question is, why is it that a king should be considered beyond making mistakes? That's your question. Well, that's the should be. A king should be representative of God. In Vedic culture, the king is to be seen as representative of God. So as we would not fault God in Vedic culture, we don't fault the king. The king can do no wrong, Prabhupada would refer to that. Same idea. So in certainly in Kali Yuga, kings can do wrong. And it's not just in Kali Yuga. So, Ravana was a king. But culture says kings can do no wrong. Now, there's something above that principle. A principle above that principle is Sarvadharmam Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja. Just like Vibhishan, as an example, Vibhishan made every attempt. Vidura made every attempt to dissuade Dhritarashtra from his bad behavior. They tried and tried, and it was unsuccessful. So they left. But they observed the principle. There's this examples from Gauralila. When Haridas Thakur was to be punished by the Kazi in Puliya, he said, you're the representative of God. And you have the authority, you have the power, you can punish me as you like. But I ask you, if someone who is Hindu becomes Muslim, or someone who is Muslim becomes Hindu, then you should punish them equally. So whatever is appropriate for one, you apply to the other. But you have the authority, you punish me as you like. Or in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime, where the son of Bhavananda Roy, Gopinath Patanayak, had taken money from the king. And Lord Chaitanya said, the king has the right to punish him however he likes. He's the king. He has that authority. The king can do no wrong. Now, it was wrong. And when it was brought to the king's attention, he checked the situation. It was the son of the king. But Lord Chaitanya was teaching, by example, that position of respect. Now, it's the answer to your question is, it's part of Vedic culture. It doesn't mean that a king can never do wrong. But the citizen should regard the king in that way. Otherwise, it's chaos. Now, you have to have a qualified king. Otherwise, it's chaos. So, there's the of the citizen. So, the problem, again and again, because you're in chapter 19, you know from the first canto, again and again, statement is, because of lack of qualified leaders, the whole situation is in chaos. And for want of qualified brahmanas, there's not qualified brahmanas to guide a qualified kshatriya, so everything's in chaos. So we need these two. Qualified brahmanas, qualified kshatriyas, and citizens that observe Vedic culture. In fact, no, back to your question, Maharaj Parikshit was infallible. The mistake he made, which was a mistake, was by the influence of the internal potency. He did what he did by the influence of the internal potency. And practically, as soon as it was done, he knew it was wrong. But he had done it. He didn't know at the time that the son of the sage had cursed him. But he knew that he was going to get a reaction because it was wrong. He offended a brahmana. And he got a reaction. It was wrong. So that's how a qualified person regards themselves, but the citizen is enjoined to... the king can do no wrong. We don't criticize. It's Vedic culture. It doesn't mean that you turn off your power of discrimination. It means you don't go criticize the king. Now, modern politics, that's what it's all about. As soon as somebody's up for some position, it's bash them. It's totally uncivilized, totally uncultured, animalistic. That's the society. It's animals. It's not human. That's the place in which we live. Just, you know, in very clear terms, Prabhupada expresses. Less than human means animal. And when the animals get together, they vote on the ferocious animal. That's what they do. Look at what's going on. The ferocious one. Whether it's this country or that country. Okay.
Good morning, guys. I was trying to understand Atmarama.
Atmarama.
And how do we attain it? Or relevance for us? I was not clear about Atmarama explanation.
You know what the term means. So what are you looking for clarification about? How does it apply to us?
In the sense like I only hear like Sukadeva Goswami is Atmarama, or like there is a discussion between Lord Chaitanya and Sarvam Bhattacharya.
Yeah.
But the relevance for us is not clear, and if we can attain it, and how do we attain it?
If we can attain it, how can we attain it? Well, the short answer is become Krishna conscious. And you know, a verse from the Bhagavatam, Nyenatma Suprasidati. Ihotakya pratyata, Nyenatma or Yayatma Suprasidati. Suprasana, completely satisfied within. Where to the personality Godhead is unmixed, then one feels a happiness within. You know, a transcendental happiness that can't be touched by prakriti, the modes of nature. Microphone?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Along the same line, what Vamsadhai Prabhu asked, I didn't understand why Lord, if he's fully satisfied, why he does anything.
Because, why Krishna or a devotee?
Krishna.
Krishna. Love. Not because he needs something, wants something, is lacking something. love. Take anything, you know, creation. Out of compassion for the living entities, so they can restore their original position of freedom and happiness. That's why. And he's reciprocating with the living entity's desire for illusory enjoyment, and so he provides the illusory enjoyment facility out of love. Your mother, you do things with your children and for your children that are not even necessarily something that you want, but keeps them, you know, keeps the relationship strong, and so you can then continue to guide them to do things that are wholesome and good for them. Out of love. So what to speak in Krishna? Now, for us, there's a mix. Our love is how we enjoy the position of being a mother or whatever it is. And in transcending about oneself, the happiness is the beloved. And for Krishna, the happiness of his devotees. Although he doesn't need anything, he does to reciprocate love with his devotees. And the non-devotees, because they're his parts and parcels also. Okay? Okay.
In this text, 14, Lord Rama, in the purport, Prabhupada says that when a dull-minded person cannot understand Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the Lord has to, through the modes of material nature, punish him severely so that they can begin to understand Krishna. I was just thinking of myself. That has happened many times, that again and again falling back and experiencing the results of going into lower modes, and then somehow by so much mercy and again bringing back to track. One thing is that I'm feeling happy or grateful that I have that shelter where I'm being redirected and pulled back. But another thing I would like to also request is that how to progress from there to a place where not every time one needs to be beaten up by material nature.
Not every time what?
One needs to be beaten up by material.
One needs to do what?
Beaten up by material nature.
Beaten up.
But instead, progress without that. I'm not sure if I'm able to ask my question.
Please. I'm not clear what your question is. Is your question, how do we go beyond those repeated situations? That's not your question. Your question is,
what is the proactive way of being on track rather than keeping on?
Well, bhakti. And bhakti means I want to please Krishna. And so bhakti gives power that carries you beyond your own autobiography of the struggle with, you know, the contaminations and material nature and stuff. It's what's pleasing to Krishna. That'll keep you on track. So when situations arise that are of the repeated kind, or new twist, a new version, a new variety, you're on one track, pleasing Krishna. That's bhakti. Anukulyena. And then emotions and contemplations and actions are in pursuance of that. That when bhakti becomes matured, that's where you go. That's where life takes you, propelled by bhakti. So that we cultivate bhakti, and then we can stay on track, regardless of what's going on. Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki.